C6. Number 10B.
Presenting that the good must have more weight, must have ascendancy over evil. That we handle evil, not by handling evil, but by giving ascendancy of good over evil. Yes? That's clear. Is that the tone of marriage in the textbook chapter? Typically, Typically. So can you see how now you can detect it? See, if we would not have had the textbook matrix, and if that would not be a bit ingrained already in your consciousness, you wouldn't be able to detect that as the word of Christianity. Without categories and categorizing this sentence, you couldn't say what it was. You would say, yes, that's natural. Every religion says that. Naturally, the good must have ascendancy over evil. You should really use the good in order to not to do evil. That's an ordinary religious statement. But here, it finds a definite scientific place value. And it shows that if a dominant Eucharist says you should cast out evil, that you ask yourself, how on earth am I going to cast out evil? And the next chapter says, don't cast out evil by casting out evil. Cast out evil by giving more power, more intelligence, more weight, more love to the good. Yes? No? You see what, I'm glad you brought up this question. The question was, why don't we first define the two indices? You see, we only have defined the subject, and I've said we want to make a matrix, or have a matrix answer, a complete answer to this question. Why don't we state the indices? Because we don't know them. No, not one that is sitting here would know what to put there. Or is somebody here who would know how to put in the index I and J what the word is and what the Christ is and Christianity? We have not enough spiritual sense to do that yet. No, none of us, I think, have. Therefore, we have to build up a matrix in the inductive way instead of the deductive way. We have to first, you see, we have to do now the very opposite of what we are doing with the textbook. We have first to fill in the chapters, and from the chapters then deduce further and define the index. We'll do that. So if we would try and put an index there, we would already be off science, we would already begin to speculate. So we go out from the text now, you see, and try to find a answer. I come to the next chapter, Spirit. Oh, we have done the, yes. All right, let's epitomize in marriage. The good must have ascendancy over evil. All right. Then we come to the next chapter, Christian Science versus Spiritualism. And it's a chapter that has very few, actually I think only one or two, pertinent references to the question of handling evil, because that whole chapter explains much more that evil is nothing, but not the way how to handle evil. So don't be sidetracked that in this chapter there are many, many references on evil. Here in this chapter she would say, but this has nothing to do with handling evil, but she would here explain evil and say, evil has no reality, Evil is neither person, place, nor thing. It is but an illusion. Evil is but a suppositional opposite of good. It is never present. Can you see, these are not references that are helping us to answer our question. They are only defining what evil is not. But when we just take those where she gives a sense how to handle evil, it's mostly in the third part, actually, there. She says that evil is a belief in something besides God. For the first time, she calls it a belief besides God. That evil is an opposite error. Again, something besides truth, an opposite error. And not the truth of creation, not the truth. So I begin to see, I must handle evil to see that it is not a truth. Therefore, and now I think the pertinent reference is that we have to discern, that discerning Christian Science will hold crime in check. Discerning Christian Science holds crime in check. Can you see how she has naturally in that chapter to build up to that point by first saying that evil is not scientific, that evil is not the reality, that it is neither place, person, or thing, that it is an illusion, and then say, now, therefore, that evil is just an error, a belief. How are you going to handle it? Discerning Christian Science will hold crime in check. So, for the first time again, she introduces the understanding, discerning Christian Science, understanding the truth. That handles evil, because evil has been explained as belief in this chapter. Do you hear that? Yeah? Is that different than marriage? Very much. Huh? Very much. Again, you can see what we were seeing so often, that the first three chapters leave the reader more or less in a state of feeling that evil is something. Just as we have seen it when I did take matter and went through the first five chapters, she leaves in the first three chapters the reader always somehow in a state that error, evil, matter is still something. She doesn't say it is something, but she leaves it there and appeals to the true. And only when she comes to the fourth chapter, usually, she begins, because the fourth has science, she begins to explain that this counterfeit of God is not real, is not true, is an illusion. And here again, she has the very same rhythm in it. For the first time, she shows that really discerning Christian Science, or understanding God, that understanding really keeps evil in check. Shall we put it down this way? That understanding God good keeps evil in check. Understanding God good keeps evil in check. So how do we handle evil at this point? Through understanding good. So can you see the whole first column? I think it's beautiful. It doesn't start right in as usually Christian Scientists start in and say, you know, my dear, evil is nothing. It's just nothing, you know. She doesn't say that. She said, do you want to be delivered from evil? Do you want to overcome evil? Is that your true desire? If that is your true desire, then do something about it. Cast it out. She doesn't say how to cast it out yet. But she gives already the first rule in the third chapter and says, you can cast it out, you know, by giving ascendancy to good over evil. She's still good over evil, as if still both would be there. And then in the fourth chapter she says, but you give really ascendancy to God good if you understand really God good in its wholeness. Then you keep evil in check. So she appeals to understanding for the first time. Yes. Yes, it is combined with evil. I just took out a part of it, yes. But naturally you could enlarge the term evil with some others, but one has to be cautious not to take in too many. If you take in evil, error, well, then you are right out, you see, because error has a different aspect than evil. To handle error is quite a different aspect than to handle evil, for instance. So one has, that's another, perhaps, rule of thumb, if I may call it that way, for an analysis, is to start out on a sure basis and not to speculate right from the beginning. Rather to have a few references, but pertinent, that are really clear, than to take in too much right at the beginning and get swamped with it. And then you can't see anymore the trees, the wood for the trees, huh? Yeah, the wood for the trees. Thank you, yes. Now, we would have now four chapters and we run on the assumption that because those four chapters in the textbook matrix are the word or have a common denominator, we therefore can ask ourselves, what is the common denominator that runs through those four chapters? Therefore, you see what we want to do is now to find what is the index I for the word. What shall we put here? So that step by step we find the index I and fill it in. And so this is always a very difficult thing to find a common denominator for four chapters, you see. So one can't be too particular, detailed about it, one must really just try and find one great common denominator. And I think what is asked here really is when you go through it, it's constantly an asking, an admonition, an asking to overcome evil, to master evil. So perhaps we put there on the index I, on the top of the word, we could perhaps fill in here, really, evil must be mastered. Evil must be mastered. If we ask ourselves, does that sound strange, or does it sound very near, that this would be the very first big category? And we would feel, yes, I think this is natural. This is not really something highfalutin, that one would have to start the whole question of handling evil, that we say, all right, we must handle evil. You see, the question was, we don't have eventually the absolute and the relative. This is something I find all over the world. an attitude that has to be absolutely corrected. And this is the preconceived image one has made about anything. We know now that in the textbook there was a relative and an absolute, and therefore we will start that way. And that's not good. We must be absolutely honest in one's research. That's the first thing you have to do in your research. No speculation. Therefore, we don't care if it is absolute or relative, it's divine or not relative. The main thing is it honest? Is it an honest investigation? And actually, we can only decide on that much later when we know more about it. When we know all the indices, then we can ask such a question, but not before. You see, never, how can I say that? See, never go out from a fixed pattern and take another pattern as the model for something else. Always feel whatever you do with a new subject, it's new, and you are just at the point of adventure, and you just wonder what is coming out. It must not fit with another pattern. See, this is this what we call in German the unbridled analysis. Have you a term like this? Unbridled, when you don't pay bribes. An unbridled honesty in analysis. It must not be. It must not be. I can show you a matrix that has the divine and the absolute as indices. Yeah? Yes. So nothing must be in being. And actually we should hope that it is always different because the infinite never repeats itself. And we don't know yet in which way it doesn't repeat itself. There may be some categories that are the same, but then the result may, the point of intersection may be different or so. But always approach a subject in an unbribed way. You don't have that expression. What a pity. Huh? Now when you pay bribes so that you get something out of it, you know? Like Lockheed. Bribed. So it must be an unbribed analysis. It's an honest analysis, yes? Why make it more complicated if it can be simple, yes? All right. An honest analysis, yeah. Yes, all right. So we go to the next chapter. Animal magnetism unmasked. Here, too, it's a short chapter with very few references. And here, actually, the one that is pertinent to the subject says that science despoils the kingdom of evil. That science despoils the kingdom of evil. Because evil is a real outlaw. You can see this despoiling of the outlaw is really the touch here of animal magnetism. And therefore it shows that only science can despoil evil. Evil is not power. Therefore science has that power to despoil evil of its kingdom. So that's all what is in here. But is it different than before? Yes. What is new in it? Power. Science and science, huh? That it can really handle that outlaw. Yes. So perhaps we summarize it. Science has the power to despoil the kingdom of evil. Science has the power to despoil evil. Yes. Let's go to the next one and see, do we hear something else again in science, theology, and medicine? She says, God denies evil. The might of mind brings the extinction of all belief in evil. Truth casts out the evil called disease. The power of truth casts out evil. Doesn't it sound different? Isn't it practically always the might of God, the might of mind, the power of truth to cast out evil? As if now she would say, after animal magnetism, science can do it. Now she shows that truth has the power to cast out evil. Shall we put that down? The power of truth casts out evil. The power of truth casts out evil. Look at the left-hand side of this box. What is there? The command to cast out. Can you see? That's the word, huh? That's the word. Now comes the Christ in the sixth chapter, and shows what is the power that can do that. Is the power within us that we should cast out? Is this the we? And here comes the Christ and says, no, it is truth, mind, the might of mind, truth that casts out evil. The Christ. Isn't it? So we have to be, you see, one has to feel the daintiness of these tones. I mean, just because here we have a repetition of the term cast out evil, we can't say this is the same as in Atonement and Eucharist. Because in Atonement and Eucharist it was a command to cast out evil. Here it is not a command to cast out evil, but stating what can cast out evil. That truth, the power of truth, can cast out evil. Yes, I think that's the reason, yes. That is more specific. Yes. Yes. It first states that evil can be despoiled of its good, of its goods. And now the Christ shows, so how? There's truth, then do that. Yes? All right, can you see how with each new chapter, you feel always a difference? And that when one knows already the whole range, now five or six different aspects, that it is much easier to detect the difference. And that's what one has to do. Therefore, can you see that this analysis must be done in a chronological way, chapter-wise? We can't just go to the concordance and pick out from the concordance every reference and look it up and make some notes. It wouldn't really give any answer. It's only when we go chronologically through the subject that one begins to hear the tonality of it, and the difference kind of sticks out more and more. Yes. All right.